This is April 18th, 1995, my second session. I did three sessions that day where I would give the names to Ellie. So I gave Marshall McLuhan, Marshall Duchamp, Krishnamurti, and Dr. Beter, those four names with some locating information, like their birth date or something. So she would, before the session, locate them. That takes a little while. And then once we had them all there, then she'd say, go ahead, Bob. So I would go away. I started off with Dr. Beter because, well, they're all dead at that point. I don't know why I picked Beter. I think we're ready.
Locate Dr. Peter Beter, the ETER, from 1921 to 1987, his lifespan approximately, and he was in Maryland.
One moment. Begins with B.
Bethesda, Maryland?
No. Bethesda, yes. He died in Bethesda, Maryland.
One moment.
March 14th.
Name again?
Peter Beter.
Yes, we have this one.
Now, was it hard to get him because he wasn't part of the gathering circle?
No, he had to be identified by that name, not all of the other names that this individual has had through all of his existences.
Well, he was already there ready to be talked to.
Yes.
But you had to figure out who he was in this as Dr. Beter.
Yes.
I see. Dr. Beter, thinking of your... with the content of your tapes in mind and the terms used... is the recent Republican majority in Congress a continuation of what you term the Bolshevik takeover of the bureaucracy of Washington and decreasing the influence of the Rockefellers in American politics or in America power structures? Is the Newt Gingrich revolution a continuation of what you call the conservative Bolshevik state socialists?
He says, yes, but there's a proviso, he adds. What he says is, the Bolshevik socialist, as exhibited by the power structures of the banking institution and the military industrial complex in its drive to homogenize its power structure, that this has a tendency to continue, but through Gingrich is more of a thrust to the other direction, in that the thrust towards social is not as strong from the Republican as it would be from the Democratic, and that because of this, there's a return to individualism, which is, by its definition, different than the Bolshevik social thrust of centralism. That there are aspects of Gingrich which point towards centralism, but much of what Gingrich is thrusting towards is a breaking of the homogenies. He says the word homogenies. He means
hegemony?
Collectivism.
Collectivism.
The word hegemony?
Hegemony, yes.
Or homogeneous.
Hegemony is the
word. Oh, hegemony.
Hegemony, yes. That the hegemony of power politics, as expressed by military industrial complex, the lobbyists and the lank for he says these are complexes.
Right. Let me use some of his terms, and maybe he can clarify. The Rockefeller faction he called the corporate socialists or the corporate collectivists, as opposed to the state socialists who were Pentagon military. In those terms, is Gingrich working for the Rockefeller motives, the Rockefeller world order design, stressing corporate collectivism rather than state collectivism, or is the new electric computerized environment creating individualism beyond either collectivist gang's effort to control them?
And what he sees is, he says that it is a tendency towards the Rockefeller phenomena, but the underpinnings of this are being broken away by what Beda says is a collective individualism. That not that only the distrust of politicians, but the thrust towards a more modern word, empowerment of the individual, is more of the Gingrich phenomena. And the Gingrich can read this and reads it well. But what Beda points towards is, if you would look at the government as a complex that has risen because of the failure of certain other complexes, and that government itself is now pulling itself apart. The governing of America is evolving to local government, i.e. state government, as opposed to the centralist mess of Washington. So therefore, he says it will go through the phase of 52-card pickup, where power will be sought, but where can power be found? That's his argument at present. Where can power be found if there is no collectivenesses, hegemonies, that survive?
Right, so that both the Rockefeller collectivist tradition
is falling apart.
And the Bolshevik military collectivist tradition has fallen apart. So Dr. Beder would support Gingrich's thrust.
Yes.
Because it does break apart the old battle.
Yes.
Between the two collectivist groupings.
Yes. He says it's a pity about term limits. Nonetheless, that's next.
That will happen. We will have term limits.
Yes.
And do the Evereens or Dr. Beder see that Clinton definitely will lose, or is that still up in the air?
No, Clinton definitely lose.
And it'll be a Republican president.
A Republican president, yes.
Can you say who it'll be?
Graham.
Graham will be president?
Yes.
Is Dr. Beder saying that?
Yes. So are others.
Would the Evergreens agree?
Yes.
Will he be assisted by Powell? What's his name? Colin Powell?
No, there's another one in there. We don't have the name, but Powell is clever. Powell is not going to get caught in anything yet. No, there is another in here. But you see, the point that Beda stresses is that Graham is essentially a numbers man, while prior there has been power men, and the power men are becoming essentially within the question of where can you get power is becoming incestuous, he says. power in Washington is power in Washington, but does not hold any power in Nebraska.
Right.
Nebraska goes its own way. And more the states go their own way. So therefore, it's a numbers man that is necessary for the country as a whole to work on numbers, not necessarily disbursement of power, because the power structure is failing rapidly.
Numbers, you mean by the number of votes or number of supporting?
The numbers of the budget, the numbers of the tax situation, that through Graham, the Beta points here that he calls this a Bolshevik army of tax collectors. You see?
Yes.
And says that that is a power structure in itself, contrary to the Constitution of the United States, if seen from the perspective that there must not be a unfederal law enforcement agency, and that Graham and others pull down that structure, that the devolving of power by the Republicans after a 40-year creation of power through the Democrats still leaves the question up in the air, what's power?
And you said devolving, not evolving.
Not evolving.
But you don't mean a negative sense of devolving.
No, not at all.
You did not foresee that kind of, we'll call it, you know, effect of computer technology, decentralization that Marshall wrote about. You did not see that while making your tapes, did you?
Yes.
You did see it?
Absolutely.
Did you use the terms Bolsheviks? I mean, I assume there was a Rockefeller, Rush, Moscow, Bolshevik secret sharing of information, but were you using Bolsheviks for a metaphor or for effect?
He says partially a metaphor, partially as an apt description.
Of the CIA-KGB alliance, so to speak.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
He points that he points out that if you're going to take the Reds as Bolsheviks and the appurtenances of the complexes that exist within the Western hegemony.
The appearances or appurtenances?
Appurtenances.
Okay.
Of they being Bolsheviks. But when the two sets of Bolsheviks got together, they realized the differences of the Bolsheviks they were.
You mean the Rockefellers and the Bolsheviks?
Yes.
It's spy versus spy, the Mad Magazine image of the black and white image of each other, the exactly same.
Yes.
Though there is a difference.
Though there is a difference.
Cultural.
Considerably.
Yes.
But Beta stresses one point. What is the grasping of power if there is no power to grasp? When the power is far more into the individuals, and the power structure of the United States internally is being set aside, then how can you become president and grasp power? So therefore, he says, the time of the power leader is virtually finished.
Right, and that's the meaning of my role as Bob Dobbs, where I claim I run the world from my electrically autonomous position. I mean, I represent everybody's
autonomy.
Situation, everybody's autonomy today.
Yes.
Technologically.
Yes.
Yes. So he would appreciate the Bob Dobbs role I play. As it means.
He says it would once be considered subversive, but now is considered patriotic.
Yes, and almost palliative.
And palliative.
It supports what people are experiencing.
Exactly.
Themselves, yes. What advice, Dr. Beter, would you give to Lyndon LaRouche today, if you had a chance to communicate to him?
Stop trying to create power structures, he says. If you cannot create a power structure in an environment that decries power structure and then describes the members of that power structure as leeches, i.e. the politician and the reaction to politicalisms. It's what Beda says. And what Beda adds is that if there were, through LaRouche, a means of individualizing, then there would be success. But if there's collectivization, there's going to be problems, because collectivization implies a power structure, and the hierarchical of this is breaking down. So you're going to build something that's going to fall apart.
That's right. So Lynn LaRouche still is a diehard centralist.
Yes.
So he's obsolete in terms of what's happening today.
You've got it.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Beter. Good talking to you. I'd now like to address... let's contact Marsha McLuhan.
McLuhan. Yes, well, this one.
Marshall, your friend, longtime colleague, Barrington Nevitt, passed over a couple months ago.
Yes, he knows that.
Is he with you, Marshall?
Yes.
You've communicated since he passed over.
Yes.
I was wondering, what did you and Barry share? What did you sort of discover with each other in spirit in looking back on your life together? Is there a way you can talk about that?
Yes.
You can talk about, so what did you learn from Barry that you didn't know when Barry and you were together in the body, and what did Barry learn from you once he met you in spirit?
That certain things, though approached from different directions, were synonymous. That it was a matter of phrasing, it was a matter of words, not so much as philosophy. Because the philosophy began to be in its discussion, while in flesh, needed to have a certain progression with itself, and that in spirit was able to see that the similarities and even the similes were appropriate, because and realize that McLuhan did hear the words that Beda said and wishes to add more to it, because when this other individual cast off clay,
who, Nevitt or Beda?
Nevitt.
Yes.
But when Nevitt cast off clay, then it was to McLuhan's delight that he could show Nevitt that these certain things proved out that it moves to the point where, and this is Marshall's description, that a Indian peasant with a cellular phone is a powerful economic force.
Are you thinking of someone in particular or just in general?
In general.
Yes. Even the woman who, South American Indian peasant, maybe you'd call her, who won the Nobel Peace Prize a couple of years ago.
Yes.
That's another example of decentralized power.
Yes.
Marshall is delighted showing Barrington Nevitt the truth that was in their book, Take Today, The Executive is Dropout.
Yes.
That was borne out.
Yes, borne out, shown it.
And that's what Dr. Beter was talking about, the same thing. Now, back to Dr. Beter, he told me that he thought Marshall McLuhan was a great mind. Did Beter understand the decentralization of power, the way it's borne out to Marshall's delight, during his lifetime, during Beter's lifetime?
Beter said that he did not believe that it would come as quickly as it came. He knew there was going to be a decline, because there was to be a decline. He insists that the decline is built in within the system of collectivism. But he did not realize it would be so sudden.
So he, Dr. Peter, would give credit to Marshall McLuhan for seeing how sudden it was going to come.
Yes.
Yes. Marshall had the edge on that point.
Oh, yes.
And Dr. Peter used to talk about the hope of the world would come out of Russia in the 21st century. Does he still see that happening?
What? Peter points out, and so do others, that after the suppression of 75 years, that the pendulum swings and swings far in the other direction. And what Peter pointed out is that the United States and the Soviet Union, note to the names, would cross each other's political center point, and if unchecked, the United States would become ever centralized, and that the Soviet Union would become decentralized. And what he says he did not realize that in the thrust towards decentralization would cause the collapse of the country. Nor did he say, or even think, that the drive towards centralization in the United States would cause a collapse of the United States, which he says the United States is in the state of collapse. That it is. Not economic collapse, but political collapse.
Yes.
Now, Marshall says that the infrastructure that the Soviets so disliked, i.e. the communicativeness of an infrastructure, that they were only able to hold on to power because there was no communicativeness, and that the communicativeness that was allowed was within itself rigid, that could not survive. And that with the breakup of that would be a sudden influx of communication. So that the sudden influx of communication would so change the Soviet Union that it would be then a very powerful organization in the 21st century.
Yeah, the suppression will have them spring into the other way.
Exactly.
A lot more forceful than the rest of the world.
Exactly. Now, what he says is that the collapse of the Soviet Union was because of the lack of communication and then the thrust of communication. The thrust of communication pushed the edifice down.
That's what Marshall says.
Yes. Now, Beda sees that the freedom from the hegemonies again, please, are such that the remnants of the Soviet Union to form centralization will not be successful, and that this thrust of individualism in the United States, the breaking down of the centralism of the Russian Republic, results in essentially two countries now on the same path, and that they did not cross each other, but now they're aligned to each other.
Yes.
Now, there are others that wish to get in on this conversation, but Marshall is saying that the only way that the Russians can preserve is to preserve the older style, is to limit communication to where it was before, That is now impossible. Because the technology has been brought out, and you cannot hide technology.
Right. Now, there are others who want to get in the conversation. Would they agree with Marshall or disagree?
Agree.
All right. Can you, without talking to that person, can you name one other person?
Yes, Eisenhower.
Eisenhower is part of this?
Yes.
All right. And he agrees with Marshall?
More than this. More than this. He's from another aspect.
Yes.
His point, and he warned against the military industrial, he warned against it.
Yes.
He says that with the collapse of the military industrial, that now there can be a reorganization of priorities in the military industrial. So there will be certain very powerful organizations, but the thrust has changed.
Yes. All right. Back to Marshall. When he talked about he and Barry and Speer could see that they were talking the same thing in different languages, would that be the basic fact that Marshall was a Catholic and Barry sort of refused to become a Catholic? That they basically had the same religious view in some way?
Somewhat.
That's not what Marshall was referring to when he spoke there.
No, it was more into the effectiveness of communication and how communication molds.
Well, did he not understand Barry when they were alive?
Oh, yes, they understood each other quite well. But realized that the philosophy explained between the two had to do some evolving. And that in spirit, they were able to see the evolvement.
And in spirit, see that they were quite close from the beginning.
Yes.
Yeah, I see.
This is fascinating.
Who said that?
We said this.
The Evergreen.
On what McLuhan has just pointed out. He's pointed out something here that is truly fascinating.
Even for the Evergreen.
Oh, we find many things fascinating. But yes. This is fascinating. What is the necessity when you have a cellular phone? This is Marshall's question to you. What's the necessity when you have a cellular phone?
The energy it takes to run them?
Batteries.
Yeah, I was going to say batteries. Yes.
Batteries.
Yes.
That until it becomes solar, which is coming but not fast, battery companies now have more power than certain aspects of the military industrial.
Even like nuclear? More power than nuclear companies?
Yes.
Yes. Now, why is that fascinating to you, the Evergreens?
Well, because we thoroughly enjoy someone that looks at the variant in something.
You had not noticed that?
Brought to attention, yes.
He brought it to your attention.
But he brought it to your attention, saying that he who owns the battery companies owns the power in this world.
At this point?
Yes.
They're the Rockefeller, so to speak.
Yes.
Yes. Of course, new technologies will topple them.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this is Beta's point. That since technologies do topple, and he gives a nod to Marshall for that, what is then power?
Yes, but Marshall has written. I remember Marshall telling me that they spent a whole seminar back in the 70s on what is power, and they decided that there was no basis for power.
But it's true, and Marshall points this out with a nod to Beda.
Yes,
that power is in the supply. If the supply is high, and there is not then the modification of supply, such as things as high tariffs and the like, high excise duties and the like, that he says, he chuckles when he says this, he says China is powering itself to change.
All right. One question for Marshall. Did when I organized his archives with his widow, Corinne McClune, in November 1981, she told me that she thought that Marshall spoke to her once, I think, in the kitchen after he passed over, and said that he should have written more about Jesus Christ. Did that happen? Did Marshall communicate to Corinne?
He says yes.
And,
is that what he said?
Yeah, he did. And Corinne knows that. I mean, she heard an audio hallucination, you know, an ear.
Yes, she heard.
She heard Marshall's voice speak to her.
That he should have written more about Christ.
Oh, she said that.
Mm.
Or did Marshall say that?
Marshall said this, that he should have written more about Christ.
Was the communication that Mrs. McLuhan heard, like, longer than a minute?
No.
It was a
brief moment.
In other words, she could have thought maybe it was an hallucination.
Could have been a number of things. But the point is, the phrase is particularly chosen. It shows that Marshall was not gone, as gone, but gone, but still able to do, still able to think, but still have some regrets, but still there.
He wanted to show Corinne that.
Yes.
But they had not talked about doing that before.
No, they had not.
And I was just talking to Corinne a few weeks ago, and I brought this up. She says, no, they did not talk about it before. So it surprised her. It was a revelation for her.
Yes.
And it's sort of, for me, it's sort of like the private communication that the Evergreens talked about with this at the beginning of this reading that some individuals are carrying on.
Yes.
And that's an example.
Very much so.
And that's because the Evergreens say in the evolution of humanity, we're now moving into the acceptance of reincarnation and the dying process is becoming easier.
Yes.
Right? So humans are going to be, this will be a common experience in 100 years or 50 years.
Very much so.
Yes. The veil is dematerialized.
Yes.
So in that sense, the power of the fear of death, that hypnosis deep in man's mind is lost too, to echo Dr. Beter.
So where then does it leave the church?
Which makes me ask, why did Marshall want to write more about Jesus Christ?
What did Christ do? What did the church do with it?
But was Marshall conscious of that in his life?
Yes. You know, realize that Catholicism was important to him. But what is Catholicism? Indulgences given by this Pope? Or
Thomas Aquinas?
Or what?
Or what? And did he did hint. He once said in an interview that he thinks the Catholic Church should be go through a persecution. You know, he was an outsider within the Catholic Church, it seemed to me. He talked, you know, almost heretically about Catholicism. He had his own theology. That, to me, indicates he had a different view of Jesus Christ than the official line the Vatican bureaucracy had. And it's that angle he should have written more about?
Yes, and what he says is this. What was Christ in, not from the Catholic view, as there to die for sin, as an alternate, would see the iconoclasticness of Christ.
Well, Harvey Cox wrote about that, didn't he? Harvey Cox.
He did, indeed. He did, indeed.
And Marshall praised that.
Yes. But you see, what Marshall points out is that concept of Christ as an iconoclast, of trying to break apart a system that was destined to destroy itself. But if that Christ was manifested in the 1300s, 1400s, then he would be crucified again by the church. Because the church would need to maintain its view of collectiveness in a medieval society in which the iconoclastic from the facets of Christ would most assuredly not be appreciated. Now, if Christ, as group saver, i.e. Middle Ages, what is Christ in 1995 but an individual saver? A savior for the individual, not the collective.
For the electric autonomous individual.
Exactly. Because what Marshall point out is that Christ is more acceptable now, would not be acceptable then. Now,
Christ the iconoclast.
Christ the individual.
Yes, the individual.
Not as a collective.
Right.
Or therefore a collective. Now, is Christ there for Catholics? Now, what Marshall says, if only through Catholicism can you find redemption, and that therefore there is a disagreement between Catholicism and various Protestant splinters, Baptists, etc., that with the breaking down of centralism, where does that put Christ? Now, Christ as the individual savior is therefore Baptist and Catholic. None of them holds the power over Christ that did hold in the earlier portion when it was the necessity of joining a group before there would be redemption from sin.
Yes, but Marshall often talked about his media analysis as not his personal point of view, and he seemed to prefer to keep his private Catholic beliefs out of the discussion.
Absolutely, but now it's opening. Okay.
So the tape, I have to move forward. This is at the end of the 45-minute tape. We turn the cassette over. It's how we recorded it back then. We got to find where it picks up.
Because the church will fall in two others here who say that how runny
is he? This is what he missed.
Okay, we'll just wait till it gets there.
Now, what he's talking about is phenomena. Not his own belief. He's talking about phenomena.
Right, this is what he missed. He could have applied the individual Christ metaphor, which was dear to him and his understanding of Christianity,
yes,
more and applied to the futurism of his writings.
Yes.
That's what he missed on.
Yes.
But that's because he partly felt it proper not to discuss so much his personal beliefs in such a collectivist mass media society.
That and also, what he sees is, and this is his... And plus two others here who say that how vulnerable is Catholicism at this particular point? If Catholicism moves towards the individuals with a certain philosophy that gives, once again that word empowerment, the strengthening of the individual, the empowerment of the individual to find Christ through his own examples, so the individual's own examples, and discovers what Christ is for that individual, then the church just survives. But what certain others have said is that this present Pope is the third to the last Pope. Because the church will fall because its underpinnings do not understand that there is the necessity of the individual to decide.
All right. Now, that means there's two more popes.
Yes.
Two left. Now, I would like to contact Jiddu Krishnamurti, who was born in 1895, I think, and died in February 1986.
Krishnamurti?
A famous philosopher of the 20th century.
Yes, he's out. Now, he thanks you for the famous, but he says, thank you. Yes, we have this one.
Yeah, now, was he at the group meeting already?
He's here.
Yeah, because I'm, as Marshall talks about his Catholicism and his image of, his understanding of Christ, I remember years ago the Evergreens telling me that Marshall comes after Krishnamurti in the evolution of 20th century thinking.
Yes.
But would Marshall agree that Krishnamurti talked about that individual nature of Christ that Marshall kind of put to the side and didn't develop?
Yes.
So have they had interesting discussions about that, Krishnamurti Marshall?
Basically, there are several things here that they've been discussing. One is pantheism, which both of them are enjoying, the pantheistic need of a society that is in the formation of collectiveness, needs a pantheistic gods.
That's in history.
Yes.
The past. This has been the tradition.
Yes. And the necessity of God versus the necessity of gods.
And they discussed this before today?
They discussed this many times.
Yeah.
It is a very interesting discussion because what McLuhan says, and Beda joins in on this, that a hegemony is a god that wants to be worshipped. In other words, you worship the hegemony in which you belong. But if you're a member of the industrial military complex, that is your god.
In my terms, I call it the mythic stage.
Yes.
It's an environment that hypnotizes your group or yourself.
But it becomes your god.
Yes, and your devotion, you're addicted to it, you're hypnotized by it.
Yes. Now, here's an interesting approach which Krishnamurti says, that when you have such a god, heresy is looking outside of the hegemony. And that the heretic is one that challenges the god that is found within the hegemony. You cannot argue, you could not argue the deity of Lenin in the Soviet hegemony.
It was, you had to accept it.
You had to accept the deity.
Yes. Well, these are the folklore of industrial man. These are what Marshall wrote about in The Mechanical Bride through advertising and media images. These are the modern deities.
Yes. And that the struggle between Stalin and Lenin was the struggle between who would be God.
I just read a quote by Marshall I never knew he said just a couple of weeks ago. That Marshall, now I found that quote where he says that Lenin's struggle for the image was more avant-garde than Stalin's than Marx's goal orientation.
Yes.
So Lenin understood the need for developing an image, and then Stalin was his competitor to the image need.
Exactly.
Yes.
Now, who was the iconoclast?
Trotsky?
No. That was
Within, between the two of them? I'm not sure.
The iconoclast was Khrushchev.
Yes.
Because he pulled down Stalin, but very carefully made sure that Lenin remained. Who pulled down Lenin?
Gorbachev. Yes.
Because his thrust to have communism with a human face, but the face of communism, which was then Lenin, had to be replaced.
Yes.
Interesting. So you can see the collapse was the decision to have guns.
Many gods. That's where we're at now?
The collapse was many gods, insular gods. If you worship one god, you cannot worship another. But Krishnamurti is saying to McLuhan, if there is a breakdown of religious structures, there is Hermogenes,
hegemonies.
That if there is the breakdown of this, then everyone has the right to worship whatever god they wish. So does this mean that there's going to be a theater of gods? The Marshall's point is the value of God is decreasing, and the value of gods is decreasing.
Krishnamurti would agree with that, wouldn't he?
And does. So therefore, is it possible for a Jew to worship Christ? Krishnamurti says, if you put it in perspective, that all of those who from the beginning have been prophets, Muhammad is his prophet, so is Christ, then it's okay, it's correct to worship prophets.
Right, what was that point about the collapse of the Soviet Union was due to having too many gods, or just the battle between the
battle between gods?
That's the point. So we're at this point now, whether they have a god or not. Now, I see the argument between the discussion between McLuhan and Krishnamurti is Marshall is talking about the centralized image of God, and Krishnamurti is talking about the decentralized image of God.
Yes.
And I'm sure they agree, but is there a semantic problem there? Or
no, it's more that there's a discussion of how this evolve. Where does it move to?
For humanity, as for its group image, what is the group image people are going to have?
Is there the necessity of a god?
Right. Is there, how much of a group image do we need? Is the question, right?
Yes. Is a group image necessary? Since it's been shown that Stalin had clay feet, and that possibly that Lenin was a perjurer, where then the gods of Russia?
Well, at risk of being frivolous, I would say that my Bob Dobbs image and the complexity of it is an appropriate group image for our time in all the satirical levels I apply it.
Yes, but think for a moment that because the god of communism, the god of communism being Stalin, Lenin, eventually Lenin was the final, but since these two have fallen, where then would the Soviet Union go but collapse? Now there's Russia. Russia will have a czar.
That's what Peter predicted. No, I don't know if he predicted that, but you mean the Orthodox Church?
The Orthodox Church will support it because it believes that that would be a part of its continuance. But the Russia will have a czar.
They're going to find the inheritors of it?
Yes.
But the czar family was killed off?
No, there is remnants.
Oh, okay.
So there can be another Nicholas because the need at this particular time, it's seen from one perspective, that they need a god.
Is Krishnamurti saying this?
Yes.
Now, he wouldn't... Krishnamurti wouldn't agree with that need, would he?
Nobody's saying that this is a way that Boinkle and McLuhan says that it's a step backwards, but it's a futile step backwards.
Yeah.
Now, McLuhan point out, could the Emperor of Japan ever move back into Godhead status? Though some would wish it. Could it?
I don't think they can.
Exactly my actual point.
But Krishnamurti would agree with that.
Well, they both agree. They're examining it.
Right, together.
Exactly.
Did Marshall, he was not aware of Krishnamurti's writings when he was alive?
No, he said quotes, but he's not gone into any depth.
Through Harley Parker, perhaps?
Through him, through other quotes
right.
that he'd come across. But these were not germane to where Marshall was in his work, yes.
Yeah, but once they pass over, they now conceive their roles in the history of thinking and philosophy, and they talk more now, I guess.
Krishnamurti says it's a whole mass of snakes going in the same direction. All different colors, all different shapes, but they're all going towards the river.
Right. Are they in the river or going towards
the river?
Right. With a personal question to Krishnamurti, in some of the biographies written about him, it was sort of revealed at the end of his life to his friend, Mary, I can't remember her last name, that he was kind of entranced, that he was channeling in some form. Would he agree that he was channeling?
No, he does not agree that he was channeling. In fact, says no. But that he would get into what he would call his reverie, and that he could think things out, that he would have also information absorbed in that state.
He would be in the reverie when he was not speaking.
Yes.
It was a private thing.
A private thing.
And some of his, he felt reluctant to communicate that to his followers.
Because they would put him in the position of being a god.
Right.
That's why he said in the beginning, thank you for the word famous, but he likes the word philosopher.
Yes.
Famous god.
Yeah, I understood that. I used the word famous to help identify him in the evergreen situation there, because he is a widely read person.
Exactly.
Yes. So his reverie was just personal inspiration, in a way, his imagination.
His imagination, but he did open himself up both to thought that was available to be absorbed.
He sort of was a conscious medium.
Yes.
That's a kind of spiritual development, I think.
Yes. And that, notice his privacy in this.
Yes. And so he, in the end of the biography, he discusses a little bit with some of his female followers or associates, but he didn't get communicated clearly, I would say, in the book. Would you agree?
It's obfuscated. It kept unclear.
Right. All right. I'd like to now bring another person into this discussion. Yeah, Marcel Duchamp.
We have a Marcel Duchamp, MARCELDUCHAMP. He is
1887, he was born.
1968, roughly, and he was living in France and New York.
He's a well-known artist who did the large glass and a new descending a staircase of the famous painting.
Yes, we have, that's right.
Now, is he part of this group already? Or is he ready to be part of this? Or have we just evoked him?
What he says is, painters think as well as eat.
And I think that is resonates with that what Krishnamurti did privately think. Marshall definitely thought. Barry Nevin thought. Dr. Peter thought. Now, Marshall Duchamp's position, his silence he took on, it was revealed later when he passed over that he was working on his last work secretly. How does Marshall and Krishnamurti see their work in relation to the thinking and work of Duchamp? And what would Duchamp say about that?
Different.
They see his strategy different?
They see his strategy is necessary for himself. But they see him as a different person. You see, Krishnamurti says that he himself indulged himself in philosophy. He indulged himself.
Is that with a negative connotation?
There is the spiritual connotation that you indulge, and if you indulge, you should not. It's a Catholicism.
He means it that way.
Yes. And did it for his own satisfaction, to indulge in something.
Is that by reading philosophy or just thinking philosophically?
By being in philosophy.
Right, being a philosopher.
Now, McLuhan says that he indulged himself in communication.
Yes.
Now, what they point to is that Snap did not indulge himself in that.
Did he indulge himself in his hobbies?
He did not indulge himself, period.
So we conclude he's more balanced?
No, what they're saying is, what would have been the difference if he had have indulged himself? What if he had done it for other reasons?
Say that, I'm not sure what that means.
Why did he create these things?
In secret, so to speak.
Why?
He was had thought it, he wanted to express it.
But he could not do this. What is his output?
Oh, because he wasn't as skillful of an artist.
He could not indulge himself.
Oh, with his character?
Yes. If he indulged himself in his art, he would have smashed it into the world. So why this entire subject is being brought up is because in a group hegemony, you can not indulge.
But Duchamp was not in a group situation. He was very individualist.
He was driven contrary to the group.
So because he was reacting to the group, he was controlled by the group.
Yes.
I see. And he now can see that perspective he has on his life.
Yes. So therefore, what was his individualism? Where was his individualism?
Reactionary.
It was reactionary. Now, look at two. Now, this is not compared positively or negatively. It's just an examination of the raw part of it. Who was the individual? Now, look at the individualism of McLuhan. The individualism of Krishnamurti. You cannot do something unless you indulge yourself in it.
That's individualism.
Yes. The group does not allow indulgement but in the group. You cannot indulge what the individual wishes because then the group will shatter apart. Now, the choice of a Indonesian rice farmer to have a cellular phone is indulgement.
Yes.
So therefore, the society that prevents this shatters.
Right. Now, I'd like to ask Duchamp a question. A close friend of Marshall McLuhan was John Cage.
Yes.
Now, Duchamp was a close friend of John Cage. Did John Cage discuss Marshall's work with Duchamp?
In passing.
Was that because John Cage, who may be there now, he could be part of this conversation?
But he's not.
Not. But is that because John Cage did not relate McLuhan's work to the arty world that Duchamp and he were part of?
You see,
been around Duchamp.
This is difficult for art to be explained. The argument, if you explain humor, then it no longer is funny. If you explain art, then it no longer becomes art. It becomes artifice. And that McLuhan was in the process of explaining some of the very basics of societal interactiveness and how it would flow and where they would move. To the artist, McLuhan is a disaster. Because the artifice is being set aside. Again, the art is being set aside for artists.
But did Marshall explain too much from the artist's point of view?
Yes. No, what Marshall says is then the mystery is being taken out of weather prediction, because weather prediction is becoming much more accurate. So therefore, weather is no longer a god. Weather, at one time, but if your house was struck by lightning, it was a sign that God had a disapproval for the family within the structure that was struck.
Yes.
It was a form of almighty disapproval.
It was a form of communication.
A form of communication. But weather is now no longer a god, but an artifice.
So Duchamp, I would see Duchamp's career, can he,
one point. Duchamp says that may be true, and that a person would know that a cloud is full of water molecules, but it's still an attractive cloud, even though you know its structure. And McLuhan says you're arguing for the you're arguing for the artifice.
Which is the cloud itself.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, it would seem that Duchamp
this must end soon.
All right. So Duchamp, in his last work, which he kept secret for many years, was he trying to show the way it's located in Philadelphia, you can look at it through one hole. It's like he was trying to keep the eye in one position so it cannot move about. And if you think of art as a visual activity, he preserved the art function, the art mystery of the eye with his artwork.
So it would not become artifice.
Right, that was his motive of making that?
Yes.
Now, was he reacting to people like Marshall, or Marshall the explainer in particular, or was he reacting to the information society and how it was taking, there was too much explanation and artifice?
To his point of view, the artist should make his own brushes.
So he really enhanced the stereotype of individualism.
In actuality, no. He was, he believed he was.
That's right.
But in actuality, he was causing people to be, if they were to be a member of this group, they must do this in a particular manner.
Well, if Duchamp can say this, he doesn't have to, would he agree then that society has more to learn from Marshall's writings on art than his effort, than Duchamp's effort?
He agrees to a degree, he agrees, but says, strip away the art and all you have left is artifice. No, he says it's just a different channel, a different direction. But how can you have art in a society where everything is explained?
That's right. So the mystery of existence is what Duchamp was interested in, and as was Marshall. And so we have a group discussion here about the nature of the individual. And this whole discussion has resonances and ramifications and contradictions by this discussion.
Good. And now this must end.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. So unless there's any further comments, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities all in thy love and thy perfection. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Done.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally, and begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally, now.
Done.
And thank you for our sessions, and fare thee well.
We do thank you. To you both. God's blessing.
Thank you, everybody. And now I would like Michael to awaken feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
Came out of that session, a couple of interesting things for me is that one thing is I was looking at this one artist, Duchamp, who was absolutely against technology, like you wouldn't believe. You know, if you're an artist, you make your own paints. You make your own brushes. You weave your own canvas. You might make your own frame. You know, all that sort of thing. he was saying that what do you do when you paint a cloud? You point a light meter at it and measure the measure the lux of it, and then
the exact whiteness.
Yeah, get the exact whiteness of a cloud. He said Gainsborough could do it in the morning. No, it was not technical. But very interesting that such a man who is not Luddite.
Right.
No, because he doesn't know, but Cassandra-like.
What's Cassandra?
Cassandra is the one who kept on saying the whole damn thing is going to fall apart. You know,
a worrier.
A worrier.
Like a Chicken Little.
Like a Chicken Little. Okay. Right. One of the Greek gods.
Was it male or female?
Female.
Okay.
Okay, so is that right in the middle of some... One's a religious philosopher, one's a social philosopher, one's a politician, and one... I know, Dr. Beter says... he used to bum on the highway of life.
So the direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to name who those,
well,
which was
there's,
which?
There's McLuhan, who is, he says, look, it's so simple in hindsight. He said, all you have to do is look at what I wrote, see what happened, and then project it out, and you're going to see it. He said, it's as clear as a bell. He said it doesn't. It's not complex. And the other one was Krishnamurti, which I thought was a. I thought it would be a different person than he is.
Did you talk to him? Are you like aware?
I was there watching.
You're talking your observation from an audience perspective of him.
Mm-hmm.
Had you heard of Krishnamurti before?
Well, I've heard of Krishnamurti and
Seen him.
No, I hadn't seen him otherwise on the back of a book jacket. You know,
yeah. So you had this preconception.
Yeah, but he would be mystic, and he's not. He's saying, you know, you have to think about these things for life, but you have to live in this. You live in this world. And the Evergreens thing was, if you're on top of a mountain and you get enlightenment, the first thing you realize is it's off the goddamn mountain. And
this guy was like that.
But he's like that. He's saying, you know, I don't know what he's saying about. What is the philosophy of the chicken pot pie? You know, you have to start thinking about these things. Why do we have chicken pot pies?
That's what he likes to think about.
Yeah, he likes to think about that. But McLuhan was fascinating because McLuhan was saying, the technology and what drives the technology. Right now he's saying that the incredible forward leap in batteries. He said, the average battery was it lit your flashlight up, but it seemed like it'll last a long time because you didn't really use it that much. He said, but if you were a cop on a beat with a flashlight, you put fresh batteries in every night, well, every twice a night, because you'd be running out. So now batteries last 2 or 3 days, and sometimes longer, if they're in constant use. And McLuhan was saying that that little cellular phone with a battery, the rechargeability of it is its freedom. But the battery manufacturers have more power. But if one country said, let's say a major battery maker of Japan said it would not deliver batteries, and there was a battery embargo on Iraq, then, they're out of the loop.
Yeah,
right now.
It's the medium of choice or medium of necessity today.
Yeah,
in McLuhan terms.
Yeah, McLuhan.
The
other one was I got a good kick out of was Lenin as a god. Now, I knew that Lenin's statues and busts were all over the place, and there were quotes from Lenin and everything, but watching these kids at school in the morning giving a prayer to Lenin for the day's success, I thought, he's a god.
Yeah. Was that's like in the 60s and 70s?
Yeah, the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Yeah.
And by the grace of Lenin, you are a member of the pioneers. You know, wear your red scarf proudly. Was that?
It isn't.
Yeah.
Can you identify who's the religious philosopher?
Krishnamurti.
Social philosopher?
Beter.
Okay, who's the political politician or political?
Oh, the political guy was political was Eisenhower.
Eisenhower. So what is Marshall? If you call him a kind of philosopher.
No, Marshall is a, believe it or not, I'll say that he's the most interesting futurist that we've ever had in our world that can look at the past and tell you what the future is.
Yeah.
Few can do that. And that's what Marshall excelled at, was in the Gutenberg Revolution, he showed that that is now.